Hey, it's Brian. If you're considering a master's in sports management, look no further than the University of San Francisco. Their program has been educating industry professionals for 30 years. In fact, one of our avid listeners and members of our private podcast group, Ramon Sanchez, what's up, Ramon, is a proud alumni who cannot say enough good things about the USF program. You can take the fast track to a career you've always wanted. You can earn your master's degree at USF in 23 months. That's not bad, people. Learn from industry experienced faculty, gain over 1,000 hours of internship experience, which is super important to gain actual industry experience, and join a network of 2,500 alumni who are leaders in the industry and mentors to you. For more information, go to the University of San Francisco Sports Management Master's Program website at usfca.edu/sm. One more time, usfca.edu/sm. And the Work in Sports podcast is brought to you by the Work in Sports Academy. Four different online courses designed to teach you the fundamental techniques, strategies, and tactics necessary to get hired in the sports industry. It's that simple. Check them out today, workinsports.com/academy. Now, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning for WorkInSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. 2 years into this podcast and over 250,000 downloads, I still get nervous before every single interview. The process of interviewing is pretty daunting. I love it. It gives me great joy, but there is this overwhelming concern for sounding like an idiot or asking a dumb question. Often, due to technology, like the way this whole system works, there's a bit of a lag before you hear the other person responding to your question. And those few seconds can feel like a lifetime. You know, I ask a question and then it's silent for like 3 seconds. And in that brief window, you convince yourself, oh my gosh, did I just mess that up? Did I not make any sense? Was I babbling? Are they thinking right now? How do I answer this garble? Where do I go from here? In 3 seconds, you can get that neurotic. And I do. Every week, your heart races and then you start to answer and then they start to answer like your heart's pounding and then they start to say something and you're like, okay, relief. Crisis averted. I said something intelligible and they are talking now. This is good. I spend so much time crafting my questions and researching primarily because I am so afraid of sounding ridiculous and losing the respect of my guests. Of course, I want to ask intelligent questions so that we get good answers and have good discussions, but there's paranoia that goes into this. There is fear that goes into this. And then I get into the actual interview and I don't want to sound rehearsed. So then I start kind of ad-libbing and I babble. I mean, it's nuts. Does any of this sound familiar to you? Does it hit a little close to home? While this is all very true for me, I pretty much guarantee it is also true for you during your interview processes. You are smart, so you research and you prepare. You're savvy, so you don't want to sound rehearsed. But you are also afraid to miss out on this opportunity, so nerves take over. Pressure mounts. You want this to work out. It matters to you. So you put pressure on yourself to do well. I deal with it every time. So do you. Pressure is a tricky thing. It affects everyone differently. Tom Brady handles pressure better than Matt Ryan. Reggie Miller is better under pressure than Nick Anderson. Is that too old of a reference? 1995, Nick Anderson of the Orlando Magic missed 4 free throws in the final seconds of game 1 of the NBA Finals against the Rockets, which opened the door for the Rockets to win that game and then sweep the young Shaq-led Magic. It was painful to watch. He looked so uncomfortable in the moment. Great player. And he's up there shooting free throws like a third grader. It was scary. Anybody remember Rick Ankiel? Top pitching prospect for the St. Louis Cardinals. Electric stuff. I mean, this guy was magnificent to watch. I had him on my fantasy team back in the day. I was like, destined for stardom in this league. It was a dynasty league. It was awesome. Kid had all the talent in the world. Comes in second in the 1999 Rookie of the Year voting. lighting it up so far in 2000. Then boom, game one of the playoffs comes around, right? He's starting game one of the playoffs against the Braves and Greg Maddux. Through two innings, cruising, no problem. And then all of a sudden in the third inning, he can't find the plate anymore. He is throwing it behind guys, 10 feet off the plate, wild pitches, bouncing it in front of the plate. He was a mess, and he was never the same as a pitcher. Kudos to him. He came back as a center fielder like 4 years later and had a really good baseball career, but he was never that electric pitcher again. The pressure got to him. It affected him. So how do you deal with this? How do you get yourself ready for an interview so that you can be your best and not succumb to these thoughts of, what if? What if I can't get the ball over the plate? What if I stumble? What if I don't know the answer to their question? What if I'm sweating? What if I look nervous? What if they don't like me? For me, I've learned that having perspective makes all the difference. For me, again, this is just my pattern. This just works for me, but it's something to consider. I think back to high school and college and how many tests I took or papers I wrote that stressed me out. I thought they were the linchpin to my success. And now, a decade or two later, more like two, maybe a little more than that, I couldn't tell you about a single one of them. I don't remember any of those tests. I don't remember any of those papers. Those moments I thought were life-changing weren't. All of this stress, anxiety, and nervousness ended up being wasted emotions that probably made me perform less than my best. Then I remember, this moment is not what defines me. This one is not what defines me. Michael Jordan didn't make the varsity team in high school. At the time, he may have doubted he was good enough or thought this was a life-defining moment. It wasn't. J.K. Rowling was rejected by 30 publishers who thought Harry Potter wasn't marketable. All 30 of those publishers she could have come out of the meeting with and doubted herself or thought that was the moment that I could never get over. It wasn't. Oprah was fired as a Baltimore news anchor. She rebounded okay. You will have multiple chances at everything in your life, jobs, relationships, interviews. Don't build pressure into the equation on each one. Breathe. Allow yourself to be the best version of you and not to stack up all this pressure that does not help you get ahead. Now, with all that said, I interviewed Lee Steinberg for this here podcast and was nervous as could be. Nobody is perfect. But as you'll hear in this podcast interview, I don't think my nerves affected my performance. The questions were good. We had a good conversation, I think. Even Lee said to me afterwards, "That was really good. You asked me some questions I've never been asked before." And that's always the goal, to bring you something new and original. So listen for yourself. Here's my interview with NFL super agent and OG, Lee Steinberg. Hi, Lee. How are you doing today?
I'm great.
Thanks a lot for joining us on the show. We're going to dig a lot into your career and a lot of the things you've picked up over your 40 plus years in the industry. One of the things that really stuck out to me is you've spoken many times about the lessons your father instilled in you to treasure relationships and try to make a meaningful difference. Of course, those are huge principles in the greater game of life, but as it relates to sports industry and sports agency, is that focus on relationships rather than transactions the most important pillar of them all?
I think it's critical to have a philosophical approach to the work in this field. And so mine is the concept that athletes, by retracing their roots and going back to the high school, collegiate, professional communities, can set up charitable programs that bind them with communities and enhance the quality of life. The critical skill in this area is listening. If you can be patient and cut below the surface with another human being so that you can get deeper and deeper until you understand their greatest hopes and dreams and conversely their greatest anxieties and fears and see the world the way they see it, it becomes critical. And so psychology is a very important aspect of this because everything in our field revolves around relationships between people. And so sustaining and maintaining those relationships is critical. We'll do a contract verbally and it can even be announced and there's no actual paper on it yet because of personal relationships. It really comes down to that in every aspect of our business. Agentry has three main components. One is recruiting, the second is contract negotiation, and the third is client maintenance. And in each of those aspects, the one-on-one relationship is key.
How much of a role does competitiveness play? Because you're always out there competing for clients, but it's not just an agency. If you work in sales, if you work in operations, if you work in promotions, you're always competing. Is there an innate competitiveness? Is that innate competitiveness a vital skill for success in sports careers, do you think?
Well, I think so, but it doesn't have to be related to competing against other people. It can be competing against yourself. So the way I look at it is, if I've given the best presentation in either meeting a new client or negotiating a contract, if I've hit the correct standard, then we'll be productive. So in other words, I would never talk about other people or trash them or do right. any of this. But look, if you go to college campuses across the country, what you'll see is that high tech always is popular. Wall Street's popular, but being involved in sports in some capacity is probably the number one career choice of many, many younger people across the country. And it's a highly competitive field. So it involves being able to somehow distinguish oneself from the mass to create a brand. And it's absolutely clear that there are a finite amount of spots, whether you work for a team or a league or a conference or a athletic department, whether you work in sports marketing, sports PR, sports television, facilities management, any aspect of it, it is all highly competitive. And that's why I think there's a real key in not resorting to situational ethics. So in situational ethics, someone is a nice neighbor, kind to cats and dogs, and then goes out into the workplace and uses heinous social Darwin tactics, because the end, after all, justifies the means.
Right.
But it really doesn't. And you are how you work. So maintaining a strong set of values and ethics, and understanding that other people have feelings too, and other people have the legitimate right to want what you want, is something that you always need to keep in mind.
What about personal routine? You hear people sharing their process and their routines all the time, from Admiral McRaven imploring people to start by making their bed, to others who meditate and others who exercise in the early hours. What about you on a personal level? Are you a creature of habit? And if so, do you have a routine that you follow?
I don't really have the ability to have a set routine because every day is so varied. Last week, I got on a plane and went to Denver for a football game. That was not a day that was going to be like another. Then went on to the game and then flew back the next day. Today, I went ahead and worked on a project for the Sober Bowl, which would be an alternative to the noisy, boozy parties at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And asked me to be commissioner. My point is, everything is changing. Here's what I do get in. I always try to do cardio every single day. And I got a Fitbit, and it's been a great enhancement, because you're sitting at your desk, and all of a sudden something buzzes on your wrist and says, time for a stroll.
Yep.
So
I
try to make sure that I'm exercising every single day, doing a lot of walking a treadmill, riding an exercise bike. So that's one key. And I try to make sure that I start a day by reading the newspapers. So I get the LA Times, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Orange County Register, the USA Today, and I read them. And I try to make sure I'm keeping up on everything that's happening in the world. I also make sure to read part of a book every day, because this process of growth never stops.
Yeah.
And so if I sit down on a plane next to someone from, pick a state, Iowa, then I've got the ability to relate to them because I can talk about corn subsidies and ethanol and the fact that the Democratic Party is much more liberal than the National Democratic Party in Iowa, and the Republican is much more evangelical, and what the University of Iowa is like. So it's the ability to relate to other people on a lot of different levels. But the one thing I'm sure to do every day is to get exercise in. Not only does it release, you know, excess tension and be cleansing, it's counterintuitive because you get energy from working out where you assume you'd be tired.
Yeah, it's true. I wrote an article a few years back about the pitfalls of working in sports, you know, the late nights, the working holidays, being in a high-profile, high-stress career. It can lead a lot of people down a treacherous path. You battled alcoholism and hit near the bottom around a decade ago, but you've conquered so much and risen back to the top of your career, which is really worth celebrating. I've known many people who didn't make their way past their demons like you did, so congratulations. But really, what advice would you have for people that work in sports, and how do they keep themselves above water and grounded and level-headed as they go through this journey?
So it wasn't the work in sports that pushed me towards alcoholism. It was a series of reverses in my personal life. The work itself, the scheduling, the rest of it is just something I'm used to. But there were various, the death of my father, a blindness for my sons, loss of a home to mold. There were a whole series of things that led me down the wrong path. I think it's your mental attitude. First of all, picking a career that's not simply work, but your passion. So I just created a profession where when I started, there was no sports agentry all the way back in 1975, so there was nothing to aspire to. But if I want to write a book and I've written a couple of bestsellers, I can do it in this job. If I want to work on a movie or let someone follow me around like with Jerry Maguire, I can do it. If I want to work on charity, I can do it. And so part of it's your perspective. So my perspective is that we're enhancing young people's lives and making a difference in the world, whether it's bullying or domestic violence or racism. We're tackling big issues. And because of that, the fact that it has some extraordinarily inconvenient hours doesn't matter because I'm doing what I love. So my point of view towards it is that it's not stressful. It's exciting, and you keep changing environments and being involved in different people. So it gives you a feeling of satisfaction, remember, it's never the actual event itself. It's how you perceive it. And so things that other people might think were stressful, I just look at as, necessary steps in fulfilling my goals.
I think that's a really good perspective. I know when I first started in the industry, most of my career has been in sports broadcasting, and I'd hit the climax of my day, I guess you could say, at 11 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock in the morning after you were producing a show after all the games were done. And you'd hit that high note so late that I know a lot of my friends and I, there was temptation. You know, you're so excited, you're so jacked up. And I think your exercise point was really interesting too, is that a lot of us used to go to the gym afterwards to work off some steam rather than trying to hit the bar every night. And it's finding that balance point as well, I would think, would be very important.
I think that's important, and it's always to have some a little alone restorative time in every day so that you can unwind and also be thoughtful. Again, it's how you look at a frenetic schedule. I've got a series of appointments, interviews, discussions today, but to me it's not looking at it as a crowded, overwhelming schedule. It's looking at a whole bunch of interesting things to do that are varied. So again, it's your perspective. My perspective is I picked areas that were particularly exciting to me. And, you know, a field in which big business, big politics, big entertainment, big sports all sort of coalesce. And again, every day is varied because it can be working with a client, going, you know, to a game, negotiating a contract, working on a charitable foundation, having a documentary film crew follow me around. It's, but I look at all that as fun.
Over your 40 years, you've been around a lot of successful people, both inside and outside of sports. But you've also been around people who haven't made it, who had high expectations and didn't reach the pinnacle of their career. What have you picked up as far as patterns go? I mean, outside of natural talent, what do you think makes one person succeed while another one struggles?
So one of the keys is resilience. Life will knock you back. Everyone will have reverses. In work, in family, economically. But after you've taken a few moments to process the reverse or to process a negative situation, can you be resilient? Can you rise again? Can you turn the page and move on? So it's like in sports. If I look at a franchise quarterback, I'm looking at someone who, in moments of adversity, this player has thrown two interceptions. The crowd is booing. His center's looking at him like he's on hallucinogens. And the game's getting out of hand. Can that player compartmentalize, adopt a quiet mind, and proceed to elevate his level of play to take a team to and through? So the point is that one of the keys, I think, is being present in this moment and focused. So if I'm sitting and having a discussion with you, the only thing in my mind is your voice. Or if I'm having a meeting in my office, the only thing is that. I'm not looking at my cell phone. I'm not worried about what time it is or what came before or what came after. I am in that moment. So that's one real key. And another is to have a philosophical standpoint towards everything. I don't expect to get every new client. I don't expect to that every contract will be wonderful. You have to go in with an expectation that certain things will happen and not have that impact your central inner strength and your inner core. Events happen. So, you know, you're down, but do you have the vision to see beyond the depths? So when I was in my worst phase of alcoholism, what saved me was a basic sense of optimism I'd gotten from my father and a basic sense that there was hope, things would be okay, to look beyond the defecation in the barn and see the pony.
Before you were Lee Steinberg, the man synonymous with sports agency, you were a political science undergrad and then a Berkeley law grad. Now, I imagine you walk into a room with parents and college-age athletes and you have immediate gravitas. But back then, you didn't have that cachet. How did you land your first clients without the massive success story and proof of concept to share? What was your approach?
So I was serendipitous, or received serendipitous circumstances, because when I got out of law school, my very first client and the first piece of work I ever did was representing Steve Bartkowski, who was the very first pick in the first round of the NFL draft. Yep. And so I'd like to say that there were older mentors to learn from. No. I'd like to say there was an established profession. No. Teams could just hang up the phone and not deal with agents. So the first client, and the fact we did the biggest NFL contract for a rookie ever, was fairly easy because I fell into it. But I then had to later reshape my approach, because I realized that if there was an athlete who was bright, focused towards second career, had a good heart and a good social conscience, that would be someone I'd have a high chance of relating to. And if it wasn't that sort of person, I might not relate at all. So I learned how to profile what was a successful strategy in relating to clients, and understood eventually when it went from football to baseball to basketball how to diversify.
How much have things changed in the 40 years? From where you were in the 70s to where you are now, obviously the industry's changed a lot, but what about recruiting and what about connecting with the athletes? Is it different? Is it harder?
Well, Brian, one of the key shifts, first of all, if Rip Van Winkle had gone to sleep in 1975 when I started and just awakened, I mean, he would be in total shock.
Yeah, he would.
He would be in culture shock. Because when I started, there was no internet. There were no cell phones. You typed on a typewriter. If you were on your phone, it rang busy. And so for the first few years, I was my own secretary and assistant.
Yep.
So it was like that. But now the shifts, you today have a younger generation that grows up on big screen television with cutting quickly, sound, rolling over, Instagram, yep. Snapchat, Facebook, multitasking. So it has a subversive effect on attention span and patience. And so the thought that I would spend as long in a first meeting talking to a client as I did 40 years ago, no way. You better get it up and out there fast.
That's interesting.
And understand you're just dealing with a different generation. The economics in sport are stunning. When I started, each team made $2 million as its share of the national TV contract. Today, that figure is $200
million. Yeah.
When I started, franchises like Seattle and Tampa Bay cost $16.5 million. Today, the Cowboys are valued at $4.4 billion. So television has made a major difference in all of this. And now we have the advent of social media, and it can be a real plus in that it affords the opportunity to brand, but it can also be fraught with danger for the athlete or human being who's not careful with their words.
It's true, yep. So I'm curious, do you get nervous? I mean, I'll admit, I've done hundreds of interviews over my career, and I still get nervous before every one, especially this one, to be honest with you. I'm just curious, do you get nervous at all when you're entering a meeting with a client you really want to sign, or with a team in a contentious negotiation? How do you feel in those moments?
So I consciously try to bleed out the emotion, especially in a negotiation. And remember that it's not about me. It's about my client. This is not a reflection of my ego or anything to do with me. This is a task which is going to inure in the benefit of the player I'm working with. So the point is that, here's how life is funny. Getting up and giving a speech before 2,500 people doesn't make me nervous. Doing a recruit doesn't make me nervous. Walking up to a place where there's a party going on I'm supposed to go to, and walking through that front door where everyone might look at you, that makes me nervous.
Yeah, I can understand that. What about the
So the point is that I think there's a certain creative boost that people get by being a little nervous before situations, and it really is. An understanding of how important whatever that moment is going to be.
I think that's exactly right. I think that's why I get nervous. I can identify that and say, when things matter to you and you don't want to fail at them or do a poor job, you might get a little nervous because it's important. And there's nothing wrong with that.
But here's what's important, Brian, is not to go into a situation visualizing the worst possible result.
Right.
In other words, if I'm negotiating for an athlete, I have no real choice of whether or not he's going to sign with the team. They've got the money and the leverage. So I think of negotiating as tap dancing on a tightrope over the top of the apocalypse. And at any time, you could fall off and ruin a player's career. You could do anything. But you cannot have that imagery in your mind, or you would never be able to resist and get more money in a situation. So rather than visualizing the negative result and thinking about all the worst things that could happen, I do two things. If it's really going to be a long, stressful situation, I try to bleed the emotion out. So I'm not reacting as I would in with a friend or with family, but I have a perspective where I understand it's a business. And also, since I understand how to put myself in another person's heart and mind, I sort of look at it from their perspective too. So it's not about me, all about me achieving what I want to get done. It's helping the other party achieve what they get done, and being sensitive to that. So I don't really have the luxury of getting nervous, because you need every faculty. You need the focus of every inch of brain power, your hearing, speech, everything into that critical moment.
What about the qualities that make for a successful agent in today's world? If you were hiring a team of agents to work under you, what are the qualities that you're looking for?
Well, that's not a hypothetical question.
Right, exactly. You are hiring a team, always.
Because I do run an agency, and we do hire younger people. The first thing you look for is work ethic. It's the ability to hang in there and stay focused towards the task. It's work focus. The second, obviously, is intelligence. The third is a little bit of creativity, the ability to think outside the square. So anyone can do the traditional approach to a contract, a recruit, a situation, an endorsement. Can you understand what the tradition is and then do something even better? And especially, do you have an actual love for athletes? Do you want to make the sport better? If you don't have those two qualities, you can do it, but it's sort of a mercenary concept, so that you really have to have that passion. And I was once speaking down at Baylor University, which is in Waco, Texas, and yep. I was a big Dr. Pepper fan, so I went to the Dr. Pepper Hall of Fame. So I told that story when I was speaking to the student body, and about 2 weeks later, a Dr. Pepper bottle shows up in the mail. Only instead of that Dr. Pepper starting in 1887, it's got that this Dr. Pepper started in 1975, which is when my firm started.
Oh, that's cool.
And then you look on the back, and it's a picture of the young man who was in that audience and he's got perseverance as the ingredient, 100%, courage, 100%, loyalty, 100%. And we ended up hiring him, because what had he shown? Research, good listening skills, the ability to project himself and make himself completely unique. All the qualities that you would need in representing athletes. So we hired him.
That's great. I love that story. When you look at your roster of players you've represented, you've had Hall of Famers, you've had first overall picks, a record number of first overall picks. What makes you most proud about your years in the industry?
Oh, clearly it's the charitable and community programs that the athletes have done. It's Troy Aikman coming back to UCLA and endowing a full scholarship and then giving them another $1 million. It's work done putting the 167th single mother and her family into the first home they'll ever own by making a down payment and having a home outfitted. It's the over $1 billion that our athletes have raised for a variety of different causes that really can affect real life. But probably the proudest moment was standing on the stage in Canton, Ohio for the Pro Football Hall of Fame and being the presenter for Warren Moon. So we'd been in a relationship for 23 years. He played 6 years in Canada and 17 in the NFL. And now was the ultimate reward for all of it, which was his induction, and to stand up there and be able to talk about him and share in that moment was special. But just like it was when Troy Aikman or Steve Young or Bruce Smith or any of the athletes I worked with went into the Hall of Fame. So that's special, really special. I would say another special moment was watching Steve Young or Troy Aikman win their first Super Bowl. So Steve Young had been in the shadow of Joe Montana for years.
Right.
And he finally gets the starting job, but anytime he threw an incompletion, well, Joe would have completed that pass. And so he wasn't getting a break. So in the Miami Super Bowl in 1994, he throws 6 touchdown passes. I go down the field afterwards. He runs up to me and says, "The monkey's off my back. The monkey's off my back."
Yeah, you'll never forget that iconic scene of him having that post-game conference where he's talking about that. I love that moment. That's a great moment in sports. So over your 40 years in the industry, you've seen everything. You really have. And you've recently launched a video course trying to help people get the information they need to break into the sports industry. You're focusing on networking and personal branding, interning, finding your dream job. Why make this move at this point of your career?
Because I've spoken at 83 college campuses across the country. And every time I speak, there's a mad rush afterwards of people desperate to try and find a way to break into sports, very similar to the service you provide. So what it struck me that people go to business school, law school, sports management, and they learn the principles of those fields. But I was no more equipped coming out of law school to start a law firm or actually go into a court. So it struck me, if we could pass on to a new generation by doing an agent academy, by doing an online course that showed people how they could work for a team, a league, a conference, a athletic department, sports marketing, sports television, sports journalism in any sense, facilities management, training, all the different aspects, and teach them skills. So, for example, if you take this online course, it's got 85 interviews from incredible industry experts talking about their field. So it's got somebody like Jacob Ullman, who is the vice president who does the hiring for Fox Sports, talking about how to get a job in sports. It's got a very successful director who made a sports movie talking about the essence of what sports movies is. It goes point by point through every single thing. But the goal then is to pass down skills and to create a generation of ethical, principled young people who know that they can use sports, you know, to make a difference. That they understand that when we had Lennox Lewis do a public service announcement that said real men don't hit women, it could do more to change behaviors than 1,000 authority figures ever could. Mm-hmm. So, frankly, it's my gift, if you will, to the next generation coming up. So you could go to our sports career conference. You could take this online course, which would everything you ever need to know about breaking in, and you can, if you have a specific concept of being an agent, at the sports agent Academy. We do a mock negotiation where half the people play general managers and half of them play player agents, and they're negotiating for a top contract. We do a recruit session where people have to come up and actually try to recruit an athlete. So we've actually had Patrick Mahomes attend. He was the subject one year. We've had Ronald Jones do it, who's running back for Tampa now. We've had a whole series, Jayon Brown, who plays for Tennessee. So they get a real family in a real setting, and they have to try out their best. We do damage control. What would you do with a client who's in a very tricky situation? We show them how to set up charitable and community foundations and how to brand and market. So it's specific skills that will take you through any part of the sports world.
It sounds completely amazing, and we will be linking to all of your events in the show notes of this episode, and we'll make sure to share them with all of our followers as well. One of the things I've noticed in interviewing hundreds of sports executives is that it feels like most of them don't really have faith that traditional colleges do a good job preparing their students for the reality of the sports world. Do you find this to be true? And if so, what are those core fundamentals today's graduates are lacking? And it sounds like you have a plan in your courses to help fill those gaps.
The first, as I said before, I think if you go to business school, law school, sports management, what's taught is the principles in those fields, which give little pragmatic experience. So what's missing? What's missing is understanding psychology and how to listen to other people and how to relate to other people. And that's probably not a course, but that's a life skill. It's it's learning how to be creative in branding a product or creating a charitable foundation. It's having a specific know-how in each of those areas. So our plan is, if you want to be an agent, if you want to be anything else, we've got a course for you. And again, what I'm hoping happens is we start to turn out the next generation who have the passion to make sports better and not simply sit back, but when they see there are changes needed or see that there's a better way to do things, they do things like that. And that ethos goes into every single concept. The other thing in sports is to be entrepreneurial, because there are more new websites that'll be tomorrow's Facebook, sports-related. There are more new sports products. There are a whole variety of startup companies that someone interested in sports could go into in an entrepreneurial sense. So back in the 90s, I created something called Athlete Direct. And that put Ken Griffey Jr., Troy Aikman, and Michael Jordan up on the internet at a time where you still had to access AOL.
Oh, yeah.
And you got mad.
I remember. I'm old
enough.
So
they wrote about their week. They wrote about their charity. And we designed an e-commerce application to allow you to buy directly over the network. Well, it became a huge success. And it was the first time fans could see this. Now it's old hat 20 years later, but then it was revolutionary. Well, we put like a couple $100,000 into that project, and we sold it to venture capitalists for $25
million. Wow.
So part of the point I would make to young people trying to break into this field is, in addition to every traditional thing you could do, you could work for a startup that has the new concussion helmet, that has a way of doing virtual reality that revolutionizes sports, that approaches a whole variety of different ways to enhance fan experience, and ride that until the liquidity event happens.
Lee, I can't thank you enough. You've shared such a open and raw and honest perspective on your life and career with us. And I know our audience will really gravitate to all this vital information that you're sharing. We're thrilled to be partnering with you guys with our team at Work in Sports to help promote your courses. And we will make sure that we link everybody out to them so that they can take advantage of this incredible opportunity. Thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Well, we're thrilled to have that relationship with you, and best of luck.
Thanks for listening, everyone. It was really a pleasure speaking to someone with as much influence in the industry as Lee Steinberg. I mean, super, super cool. Glad you had a chance to hear it. Have a great rest of the week, everybody. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Give us a positive review wherever you listen, and share with a friend. All right, get back to work.